Oh, no, Red said. No, first we would kill you. We love killing humans. The other eight nodded enthusiastically. Mallory glared at me like, I told you so.
Also for the sake of argument, noble thralls, what if we fought you? Could we kill you?
Red laughed.
That is very funny. No, we are under strong magic spells. Boggy is a great sorcerer. We cannot be killed by anyone except each other. And we like each other, said another thrall. Yes, said a third.
The giant started to bring it in for a group hug, then seemed to remember they were holding scythes.
Well then,
Mallory's eyes gleamed like she had a wonderful idea I was going to hate.
I know exactly how we can help you.
She fished around in her jacket pocket and brought out the whetstone.
Ta-da!
The thralls looked less than impressed.
It is a rock, Red said.
Oh no, my friend, Mallory said. This whetstone can magically sharpen any blade and make your work much easier. May I show you?
She held out her empty hand. After a few minutes of deep thought, Red flinched.
No, oh, you want my scythe?
To sharpen it,
Sam explained.
So, I can work faster?
Exactly.
Huh.
Red handed over his weapon. The scythe was huge, so it took all three of us to do the job. I held the handle. Sam kept the top of the blade flat against the ground, while Mallory scraped the whetstone along the edges. Sparks flew. Rust vanished. In a couple of passes, both sides of the scythe blade glinted like new in the sunlight.
Next scythe, please,
Mallory said. Soon, all nine thralls had shiny, sharpened weapons.
Now, Mallory said, try them out on your field.
The thralls went to work, cutting through the wheat like it was wrapping paper. In a matter of minutes, they had reaped the entire field.
Amazing, said Red. Hooray, said Tattoo.
The other thralls cheered and hooted.
We can finally have water, said one. I can eat lunch, said another. I have needed to pee for 500 years, said a third. We can kill these trespassers now, said a fourth.
I hated that guy.
Ah, yes. Red frowned at us. Sorry, my new friends, but by helping us, you have clearly trespassed on our master's field. And so you are not our friends, and we must kill you.
I wasn't a fan of this giantish logic. Then again, we'd just given 9 huge enemies sharper weapons to kill us with, so I wasn't in a position to criticize.
Hold on, boys,
Mallory shouted. She waggled the whetstone between her fingertips.
Before you kill us, you should decide who gets the stone.
Red frowned.
Who gets the stone?
Well, yes, Mallory said. Look, the field is already growing back.
Sure enough, the wheat stubble was already up to the giant's ankles.
You'll need the whetstone to keep your blades sharp, Mallory continued. Otherwise, they'll just get dull again. The wheat will eventually grow back as high as it was before, and you won't have any more breaks.
And that would be bad, Red concluded.
Right, Mallory agreed. You can't share custody of the stone either. It can only be owned by one of you.
Really? Said Tattoo. But why?
Mallory shrugged.
Those are the rules.
Red nodded sagely.
I think we can trust her. She has red hair.
Well then, Mallory said. Who gets it?
All nine thralls shouted.
Me?
Tell you what, Mallory said. How about a toss-up? Whoever catches it wins.
That sounds fair, Red agreed.
I saw where this was going a little too late, Sam said uneasily.
Mallory?
Mallory tossed the stone above the thralls' heads. All nine rushed in to catch it, piling into each other while holding sharp, long, awkward blades. In such a situation, what you end up with is a large pile of dead thralls. Sam stared wide-eyed at the scene.
Wow. Mallory, that was... Did you have a better idea?
Mallory snapped.
I'm not criticizing, I just... I killed nine giants with one stone.
Mallory's voice sounded hoarse. She blinked as if sparks from the whetstone were still flying in her eyes.
I think that's pretty good for a day's work. Now come on. Let's open those doors.
Chapter 34. First prize, a giant. Second prize, two giants. I didn't think Mallory was as okay with killing the thralls as she let on. When we failed to open the doors with Jack, brute force, or any amount of yelling, "Open Sesame," Mallory screamed in rage. She kicked one of the doors, broke her foot, then hopped off cursing and crying. Samira frowned.
Magnus, go talk to her.
Why me? I didn't like the way Mallory was slashing the air with her knives.
Because you can heal her foot,
Sam said, annoyingly sensible as usual.
And I need time to think about this door problem.
That didn't strike me as a good trade-off. But I went, Jack floating along next to me, saying,
Ah, Norway! Good memories! Ah, a pile of dead thralls! Good memories!
I stopped just out of reach of Mallory's knives.
Hey, Mac, can I heal that foot for you?
She glowered.
Fine. Seems to be Heal Mallory's Stupid Injuries Day.
I knelt and put my hands on her boot. She cursed when I mended the bones, popping them back into place with a burst of summery magic. I rose warily. How you doing?
Well, you just healed me, didn't you?
I wasn't talking about the foot. I gestured toward the dead thralls. She scowled.
I didn't see any other way. Did you?
In truth, I didn't. I was pretty sure Mallory's solution was the way we'd been meant to use the whetstone. The gods, or our weird, or some twisted sense of Nornish humor, had dictated that we would sail halfway across the world, undergo many hardships to win a gray rock, then use it to trick nine miserable thralls into killing one another. Sam and I couldn't have done it, I admitted. You're the doer, just like Frigg said. Jack floated over, his blade shuddering and warbling like a handsaw.
Frigg? Oh, no, I don't like Frigg. She's too quiet, too devious, too...
She's my ma...
Mallory grumbled.
Oh, that Frigg, Jack said. Yeah, she's great.
I hate her, Mallory said.
Gods, me too,
Jack commiserated. Jack, I said, why don't you go check on Sam? Maybe you can advise her on getting through those doors. Or you could sing to her. I know she'd love that.
Yeah? Cool!
Jack zoomed off to serenade Sam, which meant Sam would want to hit me later, except it was Ramadan, so she had to be nice to me. Wow, I was a bad person. Mallory tested her weight on her foot. It seemed to work fine. I did good healing for a bad person.
I'll be okay,
she said, without much confidence.
Just been a lot for one day. Learning about Frigg. On top of everything else.
I thought about Mallory and Halfborn's constant arguments on the ship. I did not understand their relationship, but I knew they needed each other as much as Hearthstone needed Blitzen, or our Viking boat needed to be yellow. It didn't make much sense. It wasn't easy, but it was just the way things had to be. "It's eating him up inside," I told her. "You two arguing."
"Well, he's a fool."
She hesitated.
"I mean, assuming you're talking about Gunderson."
"Smooth, Mac," I said.
"Shut up, Beantown."
She marched off to check on Sam. At the doors, Jack was trying to help by suggesting songs he could sing to inspire new ideas for getting inside. "Knocking on Heaven's Door," "I Got the Keys," or "Break On Through to the Other Side."
"How about None of the Above?"
Sam said.
"None of the Above," Jack mused. "Is that by Stevie Wonder?"
"How's it going, guys?" I asked. I didn't know if it was physically possible to strangle a magic sword, but I didn't want to see Sam try.
"Not well," she admitted. "There's no lock, no hinges, no keyhole. Jack refuses to try cutting through the iron."
"Hey," Jack said, "these doors are a masterpiece. Look at that craftsmanship. Besides, I'm pretty sure they're magic."
Sam rolled her eyes.
"If we had a drill, maybe we could make a hole in the iron and I could slither through as a snake. But since we don't have a drill..."
From the other side of the doors, a woman's voice called,
"Have you tried prying apart the seam?"
We all jumped back. The voice had sounded very close to the door, as if the woman had been listening with her ear pressed to the metal. Jack quivered and glowed.
"She speaks! Oh, beautiful door! Speak again!"
"I'm not the door," said the voice. "I am Goonlode, daughter of Suttung."
"Oh," Jack said. "That's disappointing." Mallory put her mouth to the door.
"You're Suttung's daughter? Are you guarding the prisoner?"
"No,"
Goonlode said.
"I am the prisoner. I've been locked in here all by myself for... actually, I've lost track of time. Centuries? Years? Which is longer?"
I turned to my friends and used sign language, which was helpful even when there wasn't a Hearthstone around.
"Trap?"
Mallory made a V and whacked the back of her hand against her forehead, meaning stupid, or duh.
"Not much choice," Sam signed.
Then she called through the doors.
"Miss Goonlode, I don't suppose there's a latch on the inside? Or a bolt you can turn?"
"Well, it wouldn't be a very good prison if my father put a latch or a bolt where I could reach it. He usually just yanks the doors open with my Uncle Boggy. It takes both of them with their super giant strength. You don't have two people out there with super giant strength by chance?"
Sam sized me up.
"I'm afraid not."
I stuck out my tongue at her. "Miss Goonlode, is Kvasir's mead in there with you, by chance?"
"A little," she said. "Most of it was stolen by Odin a long time ago."
She sighed.
"What a charmer he was. I let him get away, which, of course, is why my father locked me up. But there's still some left at the bottom of the last vat. It's my father's most prized possession. I suppose you want it?"
"That would be great," I admitted. Mallory elbowed me in the ribs.
"If you could help us, Miss Goonlode, we'd be happy to free you, too."
How sweet," said Goonlode. "But I'm afraid my freedom is impossible. My father and my uncle have bound my life force to this cave. That's part of my punishment. I would die if I tried to leave."
Sam winced.
"That seems a bit harsh."
"Yes,"
Goonlode sighed.
though I did give the most valuable elixir in the Nine Worlds to our greatest enemy, so there's that. My son tried to undo the spell on the cave, but even he failed. And he's the god Braggy.
Mallory's eyes widened.
Your son is Braggy? God of poetry? That's him.
Goonload's voice filled with pride.
He was born here, 9 months after Odin visited me. I may have mentioned Odin was a charmer.
Braggy, I said. Is he Braggy? Mallory signed. Don't ruin things, idiot.
Magnus is only kidding. Of course he knows that brag literally means to recite poetry. Which is why Braggy is a lovely name. Bragging is a fantastic skill.
I blinked. Right, I knew that. So anyway, Miss Goonload, you said something about prying the seam?
Yes, I think it might be possible, she said. With 2 blades, you might be able to wedge the doors apart just enough for me to get a glimpse of your faces, have a breath of fresh air, maybe see the sunlight again. That would be quite enough for me. Do you still have sunlight?
For now, yeah, I said. Though Ragnarok may be coming up soon, we're hoping to use the mead to stop it.
I see, Goonload said. I think my son Braggy would approve of that.
Then if we manage to pry the doors apart, I said, do you think you could pass us the mead through the opening?
Yes. I have an old garden hose here. I could siphon the mead from the vat, as long as you have a container to put it in.
I wasn't sure why Goonload would have an old garden hose lying around in her cave. Maybe she grew mushrooms in there, or maybe the hose was to activate her slip and slide. Sam pulled a canteen from her belt. Of course, the fasting girl was the only one who had remembered to bring water.
I've got a container, Goonload. Wonderful,
Goonload said.
Now you'll need 2 blades, thin and very strong. Otherwise they'll break.
Don't look at me, Jack said. I'm 1 thick blade, and I'm too young to break. Mallory sighed. She unsheathed her knives.
Miss Goonload, it so happens I have 2 thin, supposedly unbreakable daggers. You might want to step back from the doors now.
Mallory jammed the points of her weapons into the seam. They were just narrow enough to wedge inside, almost up to the hilts. Then Mallory pushed the grips away from each other, prying the doors apart. With a vast creaking sound, the doors parted, forming a V-shaped crack no more than 1 inch wide where the knives crossed. Mallory's arms trembled. She must have been using all her Inherye strength to keep the seam open. Beads of perspiration dotted her forehead.
Hurry,
she grunted. On the other side of the doors, Goonload's face appeared. Pale but beautiful icy blue eyes framed by wisps of golden hair. She inhaled deeply.
Oh, fresh air and sunlight. Thank you so much.
No problem, I said. So about that old hose?
Yes, I've got it ready.
Through the crack, she fed the end of an old black rubber hose. Sam fitted into the mouth of her canteen, and liquid began gurgling into the metal container. After so many challenges trying to win the mead of Kvasir, I hadn't expected the sound of victory to make me want to find a urinal.
Okay, that's it,
Goonload said. The hose retracted. Her face reappeared.
Good luck stopping Ragnarok. I hope you become wonderful braggers.
Thanks, I said. Are you sure we can't try to free you? We've got a friend back at our ship who's good with magic.
Oh, you'd never have time, Goonload said. Boggy and Suttung will be here any minute.
Sam squeaked.
What? Didn't I mention the silent alarm?
Goonload asked.
It triggers as soon as you start messing with the doors. I imagine you have 2, maybe 3 minutes before my father and uncle swoop down on you. You should hurry. Nice meeting you.
Mallory pulled her knives out of the seam. The doors clunked together once more.
And that, she said, wiping her brow, is why I don't trust nice people.
Guys? I pointed north, toward the tops of the mountains, gleaming in the Norwegian sunlight, growing larger by the second, were the forms of 2 massive eagles. Chapter 35. I get an assist from the murder. Well, I said, which was usually how I started conversations about ways to save our butts from certain destruction. Any ideas?
Drink the mead? Mallory suggested.
Sam rattled her canteen.
Sounds like there's only one swig in here. If it doesn't work fast enough, or it wears off before Magnus faces Loki...
A squadron of tiny TJs started bayoneting my gut. Now that we'd gotten the mead, my looming challenge with Loki felt too real, too imminent. I forced that fear to the back burner. I had more immediate problems. I don't think poetry is going to help with these guys, I said. Jack, what are our odds in combat? Jack said. Boggy and Suttung. I know them by reputation. Strong, bad. I can take down one of them most likely, but both at once, before they manage to squash you all flat? Can we outrun them? I asked. Outfly them? Get back to the ship for reinforcements? Sadly, I already knew the answer. Watching the eagles fly, seeing how big their forms had gotten in the past minute, I knew they'd be on us soon. These guys were fast. Sam slung the canteen over her shoulder.
I might be able to outfly them, at least as far as the ship, but carrying 2 people? Impossible. Carrying even 1 will slow me down.
Then we divide and conquer, Mallory said. Sam, take the mead. Fly back to the ship. Maybe 1 giant will follow you. If not, well, Magnus and I will do our best against both of them. At least you'll get the mead back to the others.
Somewhere off to my left, a little voice chirped. The redhead is smart. We can help. In a nearby tree sat a murder of crows. That's what you call a group of them. You learn useless facts like that in Valhalla. Guys? I told my friends. Those crows claim they can help.
Claim? Squawked another crow. You don't trust us? Send your 2 friends back to the ship with the mead. We'll give you a hand here. All we ask for in return is something shiny. Anything will do.
I related this to my friends. Mallory glanced toward the horizon. The giant eagles were getting awfully close.
But if Sam tries to carry me, I'll slow her down. The walnut, Sam said. Maybe you can fit inside. Oh, no. We're wasting time, Sam said.
Gah!
Mallory fished out the shell and opened the halves.
How do I...
Imagine a silk scarf getting sucked into the nozzle of a vacuum cleaner, disappearing with a rude slurp. That's pretty much what happened to Mallory. The walnut closed and dropped to the ground, a tiny voice inside yelling Gaelic curses. Sam snatched up the nut.
Magnus, you sure about this?
I'm fine. I've got Jack.
You've got Jack! Jack sang.
Sam shot skyward, leaving me with just my sword and a flock of birds. I looked at the crows. Okay, guys, what's the plan?
Plan? Cawed the nearest crow. We just said we'd help.
We don't have a plan, per se. Stupid, misleading crows. Also, what kind of bird uses the term per se? Since I didn't have time to murder the entire murder, I contemplated my limited options. Fine. When I give you guys the signal, fly in the nearest giant's face and try to distract him.
Sure, chirped a different crow. What's the signal?
Before I could think of one, a huge eagle plummeted down and landed in front of me. The only good news, if you could call it that. The other eagle kept flying, pursuing Sam. We had divided. Now we needed to conquer. I hoped the eagle in front of me would morph into a small, easy-to-defeat giant, preferably one who used Nerf weapons. Instead, he rose to 30 feet tall, his skin like chipped obsidian. He had Goonload's blonde hair and pale blue eyes, which looked very strange with the rocky volcanic skin. Ice and snow flecked his whiskers like he'd been face-diving in a box of frosted flakes. His armor was stitched from various hides, including some that looked like endangered species. Zebra, elephant, and hare-ye. In the giant's hand glittered an onyx, double-sided axe.
"Who dares steal from the mighty Suttung?"
he bellowed.
"I just flew in from Niflheim, and boy, are my arms tired!"
I couldn't think of any response that did not involve high-pitched screaming. Jack floated right up to the giant.
"I don't know, man," he volunteered. "Some dude just swiped your mead and took off that way. I think he said his name was Hrungnir."
Jack pointed in the general direction of York, England. I thought that was a pretty good fake-out, but Suttung only frowned.
"Nice try," he rumbled. "Hrungnir would never dare cross me. You are the thieves, and you have pulled me away from important work. We are about to launch the great ship Naglfar. I can't be flying home every time the alarm goes off."
"So Naglfar is close, then?" I asked.
"Oh, not too far," Suttung admitted. "Once you cross into Jotunheim, you follow the coast to the border of Niflheim, and..."
He scowled.
"Stop trying to trick me! You are thieves, and you must die!"
He raised his axe.
"Wait!" I yelled.
"Why?"
demanded the giant.
"Yeah, why?" demanded Jack.
I hated it when my sword sided with a giant. Jack was ready to fight, but I had bad memories of Hrungnir, the last stone giant we'd faced. He hadn't been an easy slice and dice. Also, he exploded on death. I wanted every advantage I could get against Suttung, including the use of my murder of unhelpful crows, for whom I had not yet thought of a signal.
"You claim we're thieves," I said. "But how do you get that mead, thief?"
Suttung kept his axe suspended over his head, giving us an unfortunate view of his underarm hair in his obsidian armpits.
"I am no thief. My parents were slain by 2 evil dwarves, Fjallar and Gjallar."
"Ah, I hate those guys," I said.
"Right," Suttung agreed. "I would have slaughtered them as payback, but they offered me Kvasir's mead instead. It is mine by right of Wergild."
"Oh." That kind of took the wind out of my argument.
"Still, that mead was created from the blood of Kvasir, a murdered god. It belongs to the gods."
"So you would make things right,"
the giant summed up.
"By stealing the mead yet again for yourself? And killing my brother's thralls in the process?"
I may have mentioned that I don't like giant logic.
"Maybe,"
I said. Then, in a stroke of genius, I thought of a signal for my avian allies.
eat crow!
Sadly, the crows were slow to recognize my brilliance. Suttung yelled,
Die!
Jack tried to intercept the axe, but it had gravity, momentum, and the force of a giant behind it. Jack did not. I dove aside as the axe split the field where I'd been standing. Meanwhile, the crows had a leisurely conversation.
Why did he say, eat crow? One cawed. It's an idiomatic expression, another explained. It means to admit you were wrong. Yes, but why did he say it?
Asked a third.
Roar!
Suttung yanked his axe from the ground. Jack flew into my hand.
We can take him together, senor!
I really hoped those were not going to be the last words I ever heard.
Crows, one of the crows said. Hey, wait a minute. We're crows. I bet that was the signal.
Yes, I yelped. Get him!
Okay, Jack yelled happily.
We will!
Suttung raised his axe over his head once more. Jack pulled me into battle as the murder of crows rose from their tree and swarmed Suttung's face, pecking at his eyes and nose and Frosted Flake's beard. The giant roared, stumbling and blind.
Ha-ha! Jack yelled. We have you now!
He yanked me forward. Together, we plunged Jack into the giant's left foot. Suttung howled. His axe slipped from his hands, the heavy blade impaling itself in the skull of its owner. And that, kids, is why you should never use a battle axe without wearing your safety helmet. The giant fell with a thunderous thud right on top of the pile of thralls. The crows settled on the grass around me.
That wasn't very chivalrous, one remarked. But you're a Viking, so I guess chivalry doesn't apply.
You're right, Godfrey,
another agreed.
Chivalry was more of a late medieval concept.
A third crow cawed.
You're both forgetting about the Normans.
Bill, just stop, said Godfrey.
No one cares about your doctoral thesis on the Norman invasion.
Shiny things? Asked the second crow.
We get shiny things now?
The entire murder peered at me with beady, greedy black eyes. I only had one shiny thing. Jack, who was presently doing his victory dance around the giant's corpse, singing,
Who killed a giant? I killed a giant! Who's a giant killer? I'm a giant killer!
As tempting as it was to leave him with the crows, I thought I might need my sword the next time a giant had to be stabbed in the foot. Then I glanced at the pile of dead thralls.
Right over there, I told the crows. 9 extremely shiny scythe blades. Will those do?
Said Bill. I'm not sure where we'd put them. We could rent a storage unit, suggested Godfrey.
Good idea, said Bill.
Very well, dead mortal boy. It was nice doing business with you.
Just be careful, I warned. Those blades are sharp.
Oh, don't worry about us, squawked Godfrey. You've got the most dangerous path ahead of you. You'll only find one friendly port between here and the Ship of the Dead. If you can even call the Fortress of Skadi friendly.
I shivered, remembering what Niort had told me about his estranged wife.
It's a wretched place, Bill cawed. Cold, cold, cold. And no shiny things, like, at all. Now, if you'll excuse us, we have to start picking our way through all this carrion to get at those shiny blades. I love our job, said Godfrey.
Agreed,
squawked the other crows. They fluttered over to the pile of bodies and went to work, which was not something I wanted to watch. Before the murder could murder themselves on the scythe blades and blame me for it, Jack and I began our long hike back to the Big Banana.
Chapter 36 The Ballad of Halfborn, Hovel Hero. Our crew had taken care of the other giant. I could tell because of the badly hacked up, decapitated giant body sprawling on the beach next to our dock. His head was nowhere to be seen. A few fishermen made their way around the corpse, holding their noses. Maybe they thought the giant was a dead whale. Samira stood grinning on the dock.
"Welcome back, Magnus. We were getting worried."
I tried to match her smile.
"Nah, I'm fine."
I explained what had happened with the crows and Suttung. The hike to the ship had actually been pleasant. Just me and Jack enjoying the meadows and rural backroads of Norway. Along the way, goats and birds had made critical comments about my personal hygiene. But I couldn't blame them. I looked like I'd trekked through half the country and rolled down the other half.
"Kid!"
Blitzen came running down the gangplank, Hearthstone right behind him.
"I'm glad you're okay."
"Oh, yikes."
Blitz stepped back hastily.
"You smell like that dumpster on Park Street."
"Thanks," I said. "That's the smell I was going for." I couldn't tell much about Blitz's condition since he wore his anti-sun netting, but he sounded cheerful enough. Hearthstone looked much better. Like a solid day of sleep had taken the edge off our experiences in Alfheim. The pink and green scarf from Alex looped jauntily across his black leather lapels. "Stone was useful?" he signed. I thought about the pile of dead bodies we'd left in the valley. "We got the mead," I signed. "Couldn't have done it without the whetstone." Parth nodded, apparently satisfied. "You do smell, though."
"So I've been told."
I gestured at the corpse of the giant.
"What happened here?"
"That," Sam said, her eyes twinkling, "was all Halfborn Gunderson." She yelled toward the deck of the ship.
"Halfborn?"
The berserker was having a heated conversation with TJ, Alex, and Mallory. He looked relieved to come to the railing.
"Ah, there he is," Halfborn said. "Magnus, would you please explain to TJ that those thralls had to die? He's giving Mac a hard time about it."
Three things struck me about this. The nickname Mac had been officially adopted. Halfborn was defending Mallory Keene. And, oh right, it figured that TJ, being the son of a freed slave, might have a wee bit of a problem with us slaughtering 9 thralls.
"They were slaves," TJ said, his voice heavy with anger. "I get what happened. I get the reasoning. But still, you guys killed them. You can't expect me to be okay with that."
"They were Jotuns," Halfborn said. "They weren't even human."
Blitz cleared his throat.
"A gentle reminder, Berserker. Hearth and I aren't human either."
"Ah, you know what I mean. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Mac did the right thing."
"Don't defend me," Mallory snapped. "That makes it so much worse."
She faced Thomas Jefferson Jr.
"I'm sorry it had to happen that way, TJ. I really am. It was a bloody mess."
TJ hesitated. Mallory so rarely apologized that when she did, it carried a lot of force. TJ gave her a grudging nod, not like everything was okay, but like he would at least consider her words. He glared at Halfborn, but Mallory put her hand on the infantryman's shoulder. I remembered what Sam had said about TJ and Halfborn once being enemies. Now I could see just how much they needed Mallory to keep them on the same team.
"I'm going below."
TJ glanced over at the corpse of the giant.
"The air is fresher down there."
He marched off. Alex puffed out her cheeks. Honestly, I don't see that you guys had much choice. But you'll have to give TJ some processing time. He was already pretty miffed since we spent our morning searching Flom and found nothing but tourists and troll souvenirs. Blitzen grunted.
At least we have the mead now, so this wasn't all for nothing.
I hope he was right. Whether I could defeat Loki in a flighting, that remained to be seen. And I had the feeling that no matter how magical the mead was, my success would depend on me. Alas, me was my least favorite person to depend on. But what about this giant? I asked, anxious to change the subject. He's Boggy, right? How did you kill him? Everybody looked at Halfborn.
Oh, come on, Halfborn protested. You guys helped a lot.
Hearthstone signed. Blitz and I slept through it. TJ and I tried to fight him, Alex admitted, but Boggy dropped a building on us. She pointed down the shoreline. I hadn't noticed it before, but one of the lovely blue cottages of Flom had been scooped up from its spot on Main Street, which now had a gaping hole like a missing tooth, and slammed onto the beach, where the cottage had collapsed like a deflated bouncy house. What the locals made of this, I had no idea, but nobody seemed to be running around town in a panic. By the time I got back to the ship, Sam said, the giant was only 30 seconds behind me. I had just enough energy left to explain what was happening. Halfborn took it from there. The berserker glowered.
It wasn't so much.
Not so much? Sam turned to me. Boggy landed in the middle of town, turned into giant form, and started stomping around and yelling threats.
He called Flom a dirty hovel, Halfborn grumbled. Nobody says that about my hometown.
Halfborn charged him, Sam continued. Boggy was like 40 feet tall. 45, Alex corrected. And he had this glamour cast over him, so he looked extra terrifying. Like Godzilla, Alex considered. Or maybe my dad. I have trouble telling them apart. But Halfborn just charged right in, Sam continued, yelling, For Flom!
Not the best war cry, Gunderson admitted. Luckily for me, the giant wasn't as strong as he looked.
Alex snorted. He was plenty strong. You just went, well, berserk. Alex cupped her hand like she was telling me a secret. This guy is scary when he goes into full berserker mode. He literally hacked the giant's feet out from under him. Then, when Boggy fell to his knees, Halfborn went to work on the rest of him. Gunderson harumphed.
Aw, now, Fiero, you wired off his head. It went flying.
He gestured into the fjord.
Somewhere out there.
Boggy was almost dead by that point, Alex insisted. He was in the process of falling over. That's the only reason the head flew so far.
Well, Halfborn said, he's dead. That's all that matters.
Mallory spat over the side of the boat. And I missed the whole thing, because I was stuck inside the walnut.
Yes,
Halfborn muttered.
Yes, you did.
Was it my imagination, or did Halfborn sound disappointed that Mallory had missed his moment of glory? Once you're in the walnut, Mallory said, you can't get out until somebody lets you out. Sam didn't remember I was in there for like 20 minutes. Oh, come on, Sam said. It was more like 5.
Felt longer.
Halfborn nodded.
I imagine time goes slower when you're inside a nut.
Shut up, oaf,
Mallory growled. Halfborn grinned.
So are we making sail or what? Time's a-wasting.
The temperature dropped as we sailed into the sunset. Amidships, Sam did her evening prayer. Hearthstone and Blitzen sat at the prow, gazing in quiet awe at the fjord walls. Mallory went below to check on TJ and cook up some dinner. I stood at the rudder next to Halfborn Gunderson, listening to the sail ripple in the wind and the magical oars swish through the water in perfect time.
"I'm fine," Halfborn said.
"Hmm?" I glanced over. His face was blue in the evening shadows, like he'd painted it for combat, as he sometimes did.
"You were going to ask if I was okay," he said. "That's why you're standing here, right?" "I'm fine."
"Ah, good."
"I'll admit it was strange walking through the streets of Flom, thinking about how I grew up there in a little hut with just my mom. Prettier place than I remembered. And I may have wondered what would have happened if I'd stayed there, gotten married, had a life."
"Right.
And when Boggy insulted the place, I lost it. I wasn't expecting to have any, you know, feelings about being home."
"Sure.
It's not like I expect anybody to write a ballad about me saving my hometown."
He tilted his head as if he could almost hear the melody.
"I'm glad to be out of that place again. I don't regret my choices when I was alive, even if I did leave my mom behind and never saw her again."
"Okay."
"And Mallory meeting her own mother, that didn't raise any particular emotions in me. I'm just glad Mac found out the truth, even if she did run off on a wild train ride without telling us, and could have gotten herself killed, and I never would have known what happened to her. Oh, and you and Sam too, of course."
"Of course." Halfborn hit the rudder handle.
"But curse that vixen! What was she thinking? The daughter of Frigg?"
Halfborn's laugh sounded a little hysterical.
"No wonder she's so..."
He waved his hand, making signs that could have meant almost anything. Exasperating? Fantastic? Angry? Food processor? I said. Halfborn patted my shoulder.
"Thanks, Magnus. I'm glad we had this talk. You're all right, for a healer."
"Appreciate it."
"Take the rudder, will you? Just stay in the middle of the fjord and watch out for krakens."
"Krakens?" I protested. Halfborn nodded absently and went below, maybe to check on dinner, or Mallory and TJ, or simply because I smelled bad. By full dark, we'd reached the open sea. I didn't crash the ship or release any krakens, which was good. I did not want to be that guy. Samira came aft and took over rudder duty from me. She was chewing her med-jewel dates with her usual expression of post-fast ecstasy.
"How are you holding up?"
I shrugged. "Considering the kind of day we've had, good, I guess." She raised her canteen and sloshed around Kvasir's mead.
"You want to take charge of this? Smell it or sip it or something, just to test it?"
The idea made me nauseous. "Keep it for now, please. I'll wait until I absolutely have to drink it."
"Sensible.
The effect might not be permanent." "It's not just that," I said. "I'm afraid I'll drink it and it won't be enough. That I still won't be able to beat Loki." Sam looked like she wanted to give me a hug, though hugging a boy wasn't something a good Muslima would ever do.
"I wonder the same thing, Magnus. Not about you, but about me. Who knows if I'll have the strength to face my father again? Who knows if any of us will?"
"Is that supposed to boost my morale?" Sam laughed.
"All we can do is try, Magnus. I choose to believe that our hardships make us stronger. Everything we've been through on this voyage, it matters. It increases our chances of victory."
I glanced toward the prow. Blitzen and Hearthstone had fallen asleep side by side in their sleeping bags at the base of the dragon figurehead. It seemed a strange place to sleep, given our adventure in Alfheim, but they both seemed at peace. "I hope you're right, Sam," I said, "because some of it's been pretty rough." Sam sighed, as if letting go of all the hunger, thirst, and curse words she'd kept inside while fasting.
"I know. I think the hardest thing we can ever do is see someone for who they really are. Our parents, our friends, ourselves."
I wondered if she was thinking about Loki, or maybe herself. She could have been talking about any of us on the ship. None of us were free of our pasts. During the voyage, we'd looked into some pretty harsh mirrors. My moment at the mirror was yet to come. When I faced Loki, I was sure he'd delight in magnifying my every fault, stripping bare my every fear and weakness. If he could, he would reduce me to a sniveling grease spot. "We had until tomorrow to reach Naglfar," Frick had said, "or the next day at the latest." I found myself wavering, almost wishing we would miss the deadline so I wouldn't have to face Loki one-on-one. But no. My friends were counting on me. For the sake of everybody I knew, everybody I didn't know, I had to delay Ragnarok as long as possible. I had to give Sam and Amir a chance at a normal life, and Annabeth and Percy, and Percy's baby sister Estelle. They all deserved better than planetary destruction. I said goodnight to Sam, then spread my own sleeping bag out on the deck. I slept fitfully, dreaming of dragons and thralls, of falling down mountains and battling clay giants. Loki's laughter echoed in my ears. Over and over, the deck turned to a gruesome patchwork of dead men's keratin, enfolding me in a disgusting toenail cocoon. "Good morning," Blitzen said, jolting me awake. The morning was bitter cold and steel gray. I sat up, breaking a sheet of ice that had formed on my sleeping bag. Off our starboard side, snow-capped mountains loomed even taller than the fjords of Norway. All around us, the sea was a broken-up puzzle of ice blocks. The deck was completely glazed in frost, turning our bright yellow warship the color of weak lemonade. Blitzen was the only other person on deck. He was bundled up, but he wasn't wearing any sun protection, despite the fact that it was clearly daytime. That could only mean one thing. "We're not in Midgard anymore," I guessed. Blitzen smiled wearily, no humor in his eyes. "We've been in Jotunheim for hours now, kid. The others are below, trying to stay warm. You, well, being the son of the summer god, you're more resistant to cold. But even you are going to start having trouble soon. Judging from how fast the temperature is dropping, we're getting close to the borders of Niflheim." I shivered instinctively. Niflheim, the primordial realm of ice, one of the few worlds I hadn't yet visited, and one I wasn't anxious to explore. "How will we know when we're there?" I asked. The ship lurched with a juddering noise that loosened my joints. I staggered to my feet. The big banana was dead in the water. The surface of the sea had turned to solid ice in every direction.
"I'd say we're here,"
Blitz sighed.
"Let's hope Hearthstone can summon some magical fire. Otherwise, we're all going to freeze to death within the hour."
Chapter 37. Alex Bites My Face Off. I have died many painful deaths. I've been impaled, decapitated, burned, drowned, crushed, and thrown off the terrace of floor 103. I prefer all of those to hypothermia. After only a few minutes,
My lungs felt like I was breathing glass dust. We got all hands on deck, another nautical term I finally understood, to deal with the ice problem. But we had little success. I sent Jack out to break up the floe in front of us, while Halfborn and TJ used pole axes to chip away at the port and starboard sides. Sam flew ahead with a rope and tried to tug us along. Alex turned into a walrus and pushed from behind. I was too cold to make any jokes about how nice she looked with tusks, whiskers, and flippers. Hearthstone summoned a new rune, Kenots. He explained this was Kenots, the torch, the fire of life. Instead of disappearing in a flash, like most runes did, Kenots continued to burn above the foredeck, a floating bend of fire 5 feet high, melting the frost on the deck and rigging. Kenots kept us warm enough to avoid instant death, but Blitz fretted that sustaining the rune for an extended period would also burn up Hearth's energy. A few months ago, expending so much energy would have killed him. Now he was stronger. Still, I worried too. I found a pair of binoculars in the supplies and scanned the mountains for any promise of shelter or harbor. I saw nothing but sheer rock. I didn't realize my fingers were turning blue until Blitz pointed it out. I summoned a little fray warmth into my hands, but the effort made me dizzy. Using the power of summer here was like trying to remember everything that had happened on my first day of elementary school. I knew summer still existed, somewhere, but it was so distant, so vague, I could barely conjure a memory of it. Blitz, you don't look affected, I noted. He scratched the ice from his beard. Dwarves do well in the cold. You and I will be the last ones to freeze to death. But that's not much comfort. Mallory, Blitz, and I tried using oars to push away the ice as Halfborn and TJ broke it up. We alternated duties, going below decks two or three at a time to warm up, though below wasn't much warmer. We would have made faster time just getting out and walking, but Walrus Alex reported that the ice had some nasty thin spots. Also, we had nowhere to shelter. At least the ship offered supplies and some cover from the wind. My arms started to go numb. I got so used to shivering, I couldn't tell whether it had started to snow or whether my vision was blurred. The fiery rune was the only thing keeping us alive, but its light and heat slowly faded. Hearthstone sat cross-legged beneath the Kenots, his eyes closed in intense concentration. Beads of sweat dripped from his brow and froze as soon as they splattered on the deck. After a while, even Jack started to act glum. He no longer seemed interested in serenading us or joking about doing icebreaker activities. "And this is the nicest part of Niflheim," Jack grumbled. "You should see the cold regions." I'm not sure how much time passed. It seemed impossible that there had been any life before this one. Breaking ice, pushing ice, shivering, dying. Then, at the prow, Mallory croaked, "Hey, look!" In front of us, the swirling snow thinned. Only a few hundred yards ahead, jutting from the main line of cliffs, was a jagged peninsula like the blade of a corroded axe. A thin line of black gravel beach hugged the base, and toward the top of the cliff, were those fires flickering? We turned the ship in that direction, but we didn't make it far. The ice thickened, cementing our hull in place. Above Hearth's head, the Kenots rune guttered weakly. We all gathered on the deck, solemn and silent. Every blanket and extra piece of clothing in the hold had been wrapped around us.
Walk for it,
Blitz suggested. Even he was starting to stutter.
We pair up for warmth.
get across the ice to the shore. Maybe we find shelter.
It wasn't so much a survival plan